welcome to the Mount Hummer podcast. It's episode 51. We're a year older.
What happened?
And what happened this week that made our fucking year, the year we've just had, not the year so far, that wouldn't mean very much. So in case you haven't been listening the last couple of weeks, we've been coming up to our 1 year anniversary and we had our 50th podcast last week and everything else. We've been having a bit of a whine, haven't we?
Yeah, a bit of a moan.
You're a bit of a bitch.
Yeah.
That we weren't getting a cake to commemorate these amazing occasions. And I should say, obviously, we weren't joking, by the way. We weren't actually expecting anyone to send us an actual fucking birthday cake. But somebody did.
No, thank you, Alistair.
Thank you, Alistair. So Metal Hammer reader, listener, follower Alistair sent us a proper full-on birthday cake with icing on and everything. And it was delicious.
I almost cried. Yeah. I was so happy.
You just came into the office yesterday and there's a box waiting for us here. And I opened it up and there's a big old cake inside. So if you want to take a look at the cake, which is now pretty much all gone, I can confirm, go to facebook.com/Metal Hammer readers. And thank you again for Alistair for... making our day, making our week, our month.
I think we also need to say that it was beautifully iced with the message, "Happy podcast birthday, you cunts."
I know.
And that was the bit that really melted my heart. When I decided to have a slice of the cake, which was difficult to cut into because it was so beautiful, I had a slice with the word cunts on it.
It was amazing. I don't think anything sums up the morale and the ethics of the Metal Hammer podcast like a loving gesture ruined by swearing.
And it was a heart-shaped cake.
It was actually a heart-shaped cake as well. Absolutely amazing. Thank you very much, Alistair, and thank you so much to everybody who's listened to and supported the podcast over the last year, and of course has supported Metal Hammer in any way, whether it's buying the magazine, coming to the website, chatting to us on the readers group I just mentioned, coming to the things like the Golden Gods. Whatever it is, we really appreciate it. So thank you very much. How lovely.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And a nice way to start off the podcast before we have a rant later about all the other shit that's going on in Metal.
I'm not going to rant. I'm happy and full of cake.
Good. Well, I'll rant then. On that note, Parkway Drive and Killswitch Engage at Ali Pally.
It was awesome. Oh my God. I really needed that. I hadn't been out of the house for like a month because I've been ill. As we mentioned last podcast, very boring. And I really, really needed to go out and do something. And it was so good. It was like, that was my first gig of the year. And what a gig.
Yeah, I had to meet Architects, didn't you? Great. I mean, I got there. Did you see Die Art?
No, I missed them.
Okay. I got into Ali Pally for Die Art. And should say, actually, obviously being guestless wankers, we got to kind of cut round and in through the media entrance. And... I felt bad for people because there was a lot of people still left queuing outside Alexandra Palace.
Queue,
so I don't know what was going on there, because I don't think that happened the last time I was there for a metal gig. I don't know what it was. It was just some issue or what was going on, but it just felt like a lot of people were still stuck outside by the time Killswitch came on, and I know there are a lot of people there that were quite rightly very excited about Killswitch as well. So I don't know what happened there. But that all said... still a decent sized crowd inside for Die Art, and I got there for the last three or four songs, and I thought they filled that space amazingly well, to be honest. For a band that heavy, it's not an easy ask. I mean, Ali Pally can sometimes have quite difficult acoustics.
Yeah.
And if you're not kind of in London or you haven't been to Alexandra Palace, it's like 10,000 capacity all standing venue, so it's quite a big space, and because they're kind of a bit out to the side where people go and there's like loads of food stalls and all that kind of stuff in there. You get people kind of coming in and out. It fills up in a bit of a funny way. So it's not an easy venue to fill sound-wise. And I thought Die Art came across great. People were really into it. Definitely could see there are a few people there that knew them, which is always great to see. A band that's had a few ups and downs over the last few years. So really cool to see them crushing it. But with the best of respect to a very good band... you know, Killswitch Engage came on, and that's what I was all about for the next hour.
Merlin was so excited that after a few songs, he took his hat off. That's how I knew he was having the best time of his life.
To be fair, I do take my hat off for a lot of gigs, but normally not to actually headbang with my hair down. That was kind of like...
Yeah, it was. I turned around to sing a lyric, and you were there. Looking happier than you've looked all year.
I was, until I got that cake this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
they were great. Jesse's really cool.
He just
came on and...
He's a fucking rock star, that guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't know it, and he probably hates to hear somebody say that about him, to be honest. But...
He held that room very easily. As you said, it's a massive venue. It would be very easy to come on stage and just not hold the room, and he really did with what looked like minimal efforts.
Yeah, and he just, I think, you know, kills anyone that's seen Killswitch, and especially since Jesse has come back, knows what a great live band they've been. And that's no disrespect to Howard, because Howard in his time has been an immense front man as well. But they've just been, you know, almost unfollowable as a band. But they weren't this time, but we'll get to that in a minute. And this is, I was about to say it's the biggest venue they've played in London, but it's not, because they supported Maiden in the O2, didn't they? But a bit more of a partisan crowd this time, in their favour. They played London with along with the rest of the Iron Maiden UK tour last year, and obviously that's always a bit of a difficult crowd for them. So to see them come back in front of a really massive crowd again, that obviously is much more friendly towards what Killswitch do, was just awesome. And the set list was great. They started with Strength of the Mind, which I feel like, what did you think of that last Killswitch album?
I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as the other ones.
Yeah, the other.
So, but then because I knew I was going to see them, I put it on the day, and then sort of surprised myself by actually there are a lot more moments that I'd remembered and enjoyed than I thought I had.
Yeah, I think it's a bit underrated. Incarnate. I think it's got some fantastic songs.
Always.
In it.
That's a great song.
That's off the one before that.
Oh shit.
Yeah. So that's off Disarm and Descent. But
well then.
It's still got like Hate by Designs on there, Cut Me Loose on there.
Oh, Hate by Design. That is a song actually that I was not overly fussed by, and then seeing them play it, I thought it held up really well. Again, I was surprised about how that sort of felt more like a favourite.
Yeah, I think that's really characterised a lot of what's been so great about Killswitch since Jesse's come back. Obviously, that is one of their newer songs with him, but they just breathe life, no pun intended, into these into songs which you didn't think you cared about as much. Because I always think now about Arms of Sorrow. Like, I think Arms of Sorrow is a really good Killswitch song, but live, when Jesse sings it, it's fucking phenomenal. Where was I going with that point about the last album? Oh yeah, so a lot of people have kind of different opinions about it, I think, but Strength of the Mind is a fucking all-time great Killswitch song, and they started with that, it was great. They went straight into End of Heartache off the back of that. They played Rose of Sharon, they played, obviously, Last Serenade, and for the first time, I think, in the UK, they played Just Barely Breathing, and it was so good I actually teared up a little bit, because it was just... I mean, first of all, it's one of my favourite Killswitch songs, but it just sounded so colossal. Like, if there's ever a song that shows off the kind of absolute crushing guttural heaviness that that band are capable of, while also showing off the kind of beautiful melodious side as well, it's that track. And yeah, it was just amazing. And I love the fact that even when they're playing to the kind of crowds that they probably want to be, you know, winning over and putting a particularly good show in against, the fact that they're willing to just drop these Alive or Just Breathing deep cuts is really, really cool, and just convincingly all over again that it's the best album they did. What are you looking at? You're distracting me.
Oh, sorry. I was listening to you.
Oh, okay.
One of my favourite bits was when, probably at the end, when we were all talking about how good it was, and you just went, "I want to be Jesse when I grow up."
It's true. He rocks a denim
cut-off.
What do you call it? Yeah, denim cut-off better than most men. yeah, it was just a wicked gig. And sorry, I just saw you looking at the set list. That's why I was distracted. It was just great. And yeah, they played Just Barely Breathing. And it was just so good. And they finished with In Due Time, which is another... That's become like another kind of modern Killswitch classic. And everyone was going mental for it. And it was great. And my night would have happily finished there. I could have gone home and been like, I've just been to a wicked metal gig. But there was more.
There was so much more. There was good songs.
There was good, very good songs.
Lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of fire.
Lots of fire.
And general awesomeness.
I'm wondering where you're going with that. Yeah. Jesus, let's talk about Parkway Drive. My God. What a band.
It's funny actually, because you texted me after the show the next day and you were like, I'm just going to talk on the podcast about how good Killswitch Engage were for the whole time. And I was like, I'm going to talk about how good Parkway were.
Oh, go on then, because I just blabbed a lot about Killswitch. But I have to say, not many bands can follow Killswitch, but fuck me, Parkway did.
Yeah, they were great, weren't they? I think we all knew a bit of what they would bring because obviously we have them play the Golden Gods. We know they're developing their production with the fire. And so we knew it was just going to look massive anyway. But they've just got so many great songs now as well. Like, I wasn't sure I liked In Reverence as much as I like Aya. But actually, I do.
Really?
Yeah. Because I wasn't sure. And then just hearing some of those songs again.
I think the songs they play live up there are definitely the best choices.
Just brilliant. And they threw in some other surprises as well. They had a string quartet come out.
Oh, I actually forgot about that bit. Yeah, they had a quartet come out on like raised platforms, didn't they?
Yeah, which was awesome, like behind the band. I was not expecting that.
No, not at all.
Just to hear that live was very cool.
Could you ever imagine 10 years ago that Parkway Drive would be doing something like that?
No.
It was just crazy. And yeah, there was obviously flames upon flames upon flames. I think the most unique thing I saw, which someone might have done, correct me if I'm wrong, but they had pyro going up around the sound desk.
Yeah.
In the middle of the crowd. Which was fucking nuts because if you go see a band with a big show like that, like, you know, Rammstein, Parkway, Maiden, whoever, whenever there's pyro, you always feel it across your face.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden we could just feel it across our backs as well, and we all look around and there's just these pillars of flames going up all around the sound desk. I don't know what health and safety shit they had to get signed off to make that work, but it was fucking awesome. They got escorted to the stage as well. We're doing this all in the wrong order because that's so much
we
to
are
take
doing
in. But when they first came out, they all got escorted to the stage by people holding up flaming torches, and they like walk through the crowd, which I think is a Rammstein-y thing
they've talked about how they're influenced by Rammstein in that way, and there's one of their songs, I can't remember which one now, there's one that really sounds like Kinda Lust at the beginning, you know what I mean? I said In Reverence before, I should have said Reverence, like a massive twat.
It's fine.
I can't remember what song it is that sounds like Kinda Lust. There's the beginning of it, it really reminds me every time it comes on. But yeah, we are all doing this upside down, but it was quite hard to take in almost because there was so much to look at. And like I said, some of those songs really stood out to me and I could not stop listening to Reverence the next day. Like The Void, Cemetery Bloom, they sounded amazing. An Absolute Power, that just crushed.
Yeah, that song is... That's just so big.
Just makes you want to break things.
Yeah, I think that and Pray are the two songs that will stay in Parkway's set for a long time off that last album, because they're both just absolutely massive. And I think...
I could not stop singing The Void the next day, though. I actually just listened to that a few times on repeat the next day.
It was just
going around my head.
And they had stuff like, you know, Idols and Anchors is obviously a classic oldie. Carry In is kind of one of their hallmark songs. And what's really cool about Parkway is that unlike a lot of other bands, once they get to a certain level, you can still see that those older songs still mean tons to people. And most of the crowd were still losing their shit at those older tracks. So it was really cool to see that they're, you know, their legacy has kind of stayed with them and they've not just kind of shunned off that full-on metalcore identity they had years back. People are still... those songs are still really important to people, and it's great.
And they did it before... Basically, obviously, we've talked about the pyro, but it was fairly kind of normal, in inverted commas, most of the way through the set. They just had, like, a little bit...
Yeah, the midsection wasn't too
pyro. But then Winston went out to the back, and they had a spotlight just on him, and he did The Colour of Leaving...
That was the only bit I wasn't sure about.
I liked that, actually. And
okay.
The spotlight completely blinded me, so I couldn't actually look at him.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
I was like, literally like,
left of the stage.
But I thought it was cool that he did it because they made a moment out of it, because that song is poignant and it is a moment on the album that's just kind of like left at the end. It's left like in ellipses almost. It's, you know, it's kind of tails off and you're just kind of left with this being punched in the chest feeling. So I kind of thought it was good that they made a thing out of it.
I thought the idea was really cool. I just felt that... I don't know if Ali Pali is a well-built venue for something like that. Because basically, unless you're right near him, you can't really see where he is and you can't quite make out what's going on. So from our point of view, we were kind of fairly near the front, out to the left. And then you suddenly look back and he's like over there doing something and it just all felt like it was quite far away.
I think that's like, the thing though. I think if you're in the crowd, it's like quite a nice gesture. It sort of brings
totally,
a bit of intimacy to it.
But what I mean is if you've got like a kind of seated venue or you've got something that's a bit more circular almost, do you know what I mean? Like, I just think it works a bit better. Whereas because Ali Pali is just a long big, it's just a long box, isn't it? I wasn't like, to me it felt like it cut the momentum a little bit. And it kind of made everyone just go, ugh. And then it had to kind of pick back up again.
I totally get where you're coming from. I guess I like the thought behind it. Maybe. Yeah. But then they went
him turning up with the petrol bomb for Crush was pretty
that's what I was
going
to say. They went back on the stage and he threw a Molotov cocktail to the back. Basically, first of all, a logo came down.
Yeah,
like a massive metal Parkway logo. He threw a Molotov cocktail and it exploded at the back of the stage. And then I just like blinked and then the whole stage was on fire, like a carpet of fire, like loads of flames just coming up from the bottom. And then shit just went down. Just fire everywhere.
Shit
crushed
went everywhere.
Bottom feeder. Everyone was going crazy.
I would go as far to say that there aren't... because the Crushed and Bottom Feeder tend to be the songs they put near the end of the set now. And I don't know if there's a better two-song encore in modern metal than Crushed and Bottom Feeder.
They're just both so good.
Like, Crushed is so heavy. I mean, when people say Parkway Drive aren't a metal band, and we will get to this, you listen to Crushed and tell me what kind of song that is. It's so fucking heavy. Like, but it's heavy, but it's heavy in a way that can fill... That song can fill a stadium, let alone an arena. And then Bottom Feeder has the best breakdown of the last couple of years, probably. It's just... They're just so great.
Yeah.
And it just, again, a similar vibe to Architects, although a slightly different story, of course, there. But there's just so much goodwill towards Parkway. And it just, I think, when you get a band that have just done nothing but steer by their own vision and just stick to their guns and kind of believe in what they're doing, and then manage to take that into a venue the size and prestige of Alexandra Palace, like, how can you not think that's brilliant?
It's so it's just polished brilliant. And slick as well. But not to the detriment of the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's just
it doesn't feel, yeah, it doesn't feel like they're robots or there's no heart in it because there very obviously is in the songs. But yeah, it's so well executed and so well done.
And the fact that they didn't even have the drum machine, the crazy spinning drum thing, and it didn't even matter.
I
didn't either. Because I when I saw that, I was like, that's going to be their thing forever now. Like, people are going to come see that. And they didn't even have it and it still worked.
Yeah.
I think the band went up on pillars at one point as well.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, the guitarist
went up
going on pillars.
Just... Yeah, just awesome. Awesome. And yeah, very, very good.
I'd watch that over and over again, to be honest.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Just watch it forever.
Definitely. And we will get to. But we'll get to that. I also went to, on a slightly different vibe, I went to see Soilwork and Amorphis co-headline at the Electric Ballroom.
I'm really gutted I missed that.
I know, yeah. You were saying. I know you're a big Soilwork fan.
Merlin
as well.
Texted me asking if I was going after Parkway Drive, and I was like, I feel like someone's thrown me down a well.
That really made me laugh.
Yeah, first time.
Not that someone would do that to you.
First time I'd been out of the house and I was really knackered, so I had to skip Soilwork. But I was really jealous you got to go.
Yeah, so from a kind of awe-inspiring, fiery arena show to the Electric Ballroom in Camden, which is how many people is that? 600?
It's more than that. It's not loads, though. Let me Google
A few hundred, anyway. A few hundred. But
I think it's
not
more like 1,000.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of in that kind of upper low venue size in London, for two absolute veterans of the metal scene, two very, I don't want to say underrated, because I think anyone who knows what they're about appreciates what Soilwork and Amorphis have done for their respective scenes. But Soilwork, 1,500,
yeah.
Elle's just shown me.
Yeah.
That must include people being upstairs.
Balcony, yeah. Still though, 1,500.
No, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Soilwork, iconic, really important melodic death metal band. Said a couple of weeks ago, I kind of feel like they never really have quite got the same critical sway that like In Flames and At the Gates and Dark Tranquillity have got. But if you go back to their really early albums like Predator's Portrait and Chain Heart Machines, those are all-time great albums, and they've done tons of great stuff over the years. Where we talked about Stabbing the Drama, Natural Born Chaos, Figure Number 5, you know, there's loads of good stuff as well. And the new album, Verkleiten, which I know I pronounced wrong because Speed pronounced it at the gig totally differently and I felt like an idiot. It's really good as well, brought in a bit of the kind of cheesy knife-like orchestra vibes into it. That said, while musically it was tight, it was muscular, and the song sounded great, they're quite static to watch Soilwork, I've got to say.
No, because this upset me when you were saying this, because I was like,
I know.
I wanted to go... And I feel like it would have been awesome.
I know, but I don't know. I think they're one of the all-time great metal bands, but I think I must have seen them about 6 times now, and I think I've seen Speed take about 5 steps in that whole time.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that you have to be like... Jason Alan Butler to front a metal band, but I don't know. I just felt, put it this way, I'm much less of an Amorphis fan, and I thought within about two songs Amorphis were way better. They were great. Just, if you're not heard of them, I'm not really familiar with Amorphis, just really, really important Finnish metal band that kind of started off in more extreme realms before becoming one of the greatest folk metal bands going. Silent Waters is my favourite album by them. I think that's a classic, but they've kind of got a bit more proggy and fluty and synthy as time's gone on as well. And yeah, they were just really, really good. Just a really great metal band. People were really into it. Thought it was really good. So yeah, that was that gig. It's nice to see important veteran metal bands attracting a decent crowd and getting the respect they deserve. Is what I would say. Two great bands.
I'm going to catch Sawwork next time.
Please do, because they're both great bands, even if, you know, didn't want to, not being mean to Sawwork, I just find them, they're not quite as, you know.
You don't feel as much energy.
No. I can't imagine other times I've seen them, someone going, holy shit, did you see Sawwork that day at a festival or whatever? They just seem to kind of just do it, you know? But that's just my opinion, man. And speaking of opinions,
everyone's got one.
Oh, it's been a big, big week for debate in the metal world, hasn't it? For various reasons. Parkway Drive got announced for Bloodstock.
Yes, this is a very good thing.
Now, when Parkway, we knew this announcement was coming, but when Winston announced this at the end of their gig at Alexandra Palace, I kind of saw myself going, Parkway Drive have been announced for Bloodstock! But the internet's had had something to say about this, hasn't it?
The internet's had a cry because...
The internet's had a cry.
Parkway Drive are playing Bloodstock, and Parkway Drive are not a traditional metal band.
No.
Therefore, the internet is having a cry about it.
So, before we kind of dissect this issue, I think it's important to say, first of all, everyone is totally entitled to their opinion. Of course they are. No one thinks you have to like Parkway Drive. No one thinks you have to like Parkway Drive being booked for Bloodstock. It is totally fair enough if you're legitimately disappointed in that choice of headliner, especially if, for instance, you saw Sabaton and Scorpions and thought that maybe Bloodstock might book something more, I don't want to say heavier, but more extreme, as they have done in years gone by. I totally get that. I've seen some very reasonable points about people that have come to Bloodstock for over a decade, and they've always kind of expected a certain style of music to be represented. They don't feel like it's represented this year, and they felt like Parkway kind of almost dragged it further away from that. And I totally respect that. I think that's fair enough. Debate is always good, and there's nothing wrong with voicing your opinion if you feel like you've got a point to make. And at no point should we be in the business of trying to censor everybody just because they don't happen to like the bands that we like or whatever. I think that's daft. Would you think that's all fair? Fair
point? Yeah, that's totally fair. Yeah.
Cool, good. I was just using that as an excuse to get a word in, sorry. that said, fuck me, guys. I think we all need some perspective in our scene at the moment, because some of the vitriol and the toy throwing and the dummy spitting that I saw on Bloodstock's Facebook page is absolutely ridiculous. And I know that we've run a kind of jokey little piss-takey thing, kind of picking out the funniest comments. And, you know, that's a bit of fun. It's not designed to, you know, go into battle against the trolls or anything like that. We just thought it was a bit of fun, and that was that, really. But it's really starting to wind me up now to see this kind of... this idea that, firstly, that Parkway won't be great at Bloodstock. Secondly, that Parkway Drive aren't a metal band. I think that's what annoys me the most. It's one thing if you think they don't suit the festival and you think they're not really what Bloodstock's about. And they're not really at the centre of what Bloodstock's about if you look at previous lineups. They're not. I don't think anyone can deny that. But to suggest that Parkway are anything else other than a metal band is fucking ridiculous. To me, anyway.
No, I'd agree. It is. I think... maybe the problem comes because some people have just heard the name or seen pictures of them and haven't actually listened to them. Or maybe listened to a song and not gone any further.
Yeah.
Or just can't appreciate that it is a different style of metal. It's still metal, it's just more modern, I guess.
It's just... But the funny thing is like, if anything, even though they've done it in a very modern way, where Parkway have evolved over the last two albums is like... it's going more heavy metal than anything.
Yeah, actually, that is true.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I totally agree with you.
Guitar
like,
leads or whatever, and, you know, and some of the melodies, they're more traditional than they used to be.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just, I just don't understand what people are getting at when they think that Parkway Drive aren't a metal band. I don't get how you could listen to, like I said earlier, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't like Parkway Drive, that's totally fine. If you're listening to podcasts and your argument is for some reason that because you saw a photo of Winston in broad shorts from 10 years ago and he's got short hair, you think they're not a metal band, put Crushed on, a song that starts with like kind of monk charting,
yeah,
and then goes into like a lyric that says crushed by the fist of God, with a riff that comes in that's so heavy, like fuck, I mean, if Black Sabbath have had that riff on the last album, people have been wanking themselves about it. There is no way you can listen to that and then come back out of it and say this is not a metal band. If you
the way he sings the vocals on that as well, I turned to Merlin at the show because I was very excited because of the snakes, and he was singing about the snakes, and the way that he like spits out the lyrics, just very cool.
Yeah, and it's
pretty metal.
Metal
to sing about snakes and spit out the lyrics about snakes and have a massive fucking riff and then have loads of fire.
I know, exactly, and it's just like. I see people like on the Facebook page, like somebody was saying stuff like, "Oh, you're a bunch of sellouts," and you know, as if booking Park. Oh, and someone said the 1975 comparison. That was it. Parkway Drive. What's next? The 1975. It's like, come on, man.
I mean, that's not.
Are you serious? Because I strongly suspect that you haven't listened to either of those bands to actually even make that comparison.
The thing is, as well, you've got to think about who can headline a festival.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Just in terms of fan base, but in terms of what a band will bring to a show and how they're going to make that evening special. And Parkway have deliberately upped their game in the production states with things like the pyro, and again, just to the stage setup and the way they perform in the shows themselves. And you have to have a band that can hold a stage like that and can really make the evening feel special. I don't think you could look at any clips of them and deny that they have the power to do that.
Well, and also it's just like the same people who are moaning and pissing about Parkway Drive being booked are the same. They're the same people who are kind of demanding we give other bands a try and don't recycle the same old headliners. The first time I went to Bloodstock, Wasp headlined.
Yeah,
Wasp. This is in the last decade. This is 2011, right? So this is 8 years ago. Fucking Wasp headline. Now, I think Wasp are one of the greatest and most underrated metal bands ever. But you're out of your mind if you think Wasp can come back and headline Bloodstock in 2019. It ain't going to happen. They are not big enough. It's not going to work.
And isn't that a good thing that Bloodstock's grown as well?
Yeah, it's a good thing. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Bloodstock isn't suddenly going to be booking Slipknot anytime soon. Like, that's not on their radar. It's not going to happen. Like, I doubt the budget is there in what they can put out for one thing, and the fucking festival site isn't physically big enough right now to do that. Parkway Drive are a band that have just played to 10,000 people. They have a massive show with them. They have a massive show which is all fire and brimstone and, you know, smoke and cannons and all sorts of stuff. It's as metal as it gets. I'd love to say that, you know, someone like Dimmu Borgir or legends like Anthrax could step up and be headline bands. I know there's people go, why are they playing over those bands? Because they're bigger than those bands. In the UK, in 2019, Parkway are bigger than Anthrax and they're bigger than Dimmu Borgir. They're not more important than those bands. They're not historically as massive as those bands. Of course they're not. I don't know if people will be talking about Parkway in the same way in 10 years that people talk about Anthrax now. Quite possibly not, because it's a different world out there now. But they're bigger, and they can bring a show with them that can justify being a headliner at a decent sized outdoor festival. They're probably not big enough to headline Download right now.
No.
How do we get these bands to the level where, as we all keep fucking saying over and over again, once they own Maiden into the Metallicas and blah 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 blah, so we're retired. How do we get them to that level? Because we can't just suddenly slot them straight in at a festival with 90,000 people. It doesn't work.
At the
end
of the day as well, if you don't like Parkway Drive, there's like a billion other bands to watch on that bill.
Exactly. The Sophie Lancaster stage. I mean, Watain played that last year. Like, you're going to have something metal in there. I think Rotting Christ are on the Sophie Lancaster stage this year. I don't know who's playing while Parkway are on. Just looking now. Yeah, on the other stage, you're going to have, I don't know who's playing when, but, you know, Rotting Christ are on that stage. Grand Magus are on that stage. Probably the most metal band in the world.
Yeah.
Elevator on that stage as well. And even beyond that, you've got like Powerwolf, Dimmu, Children of Bodom, Cradle of Filth, Dee Snider. I'll tell you who knows anything about metal, Dee fucking Snider, and he's playing this year. Hypocrisy are there, Dire's Murder are there, Soulfly are there. Like,
that's actually making me really want to go now. You're making me really excited.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great lineup, and you know, you've got Code Orange there as well, which is a slightly left field choice. That's quite exciting. And I just think, you know, people whined when Machine Head played, they smashed it. People whined when Lamb of God played, they were great. People whined inexplicably when Hatebreed played and they crushed it. People whined when Skindred played and they absolutely destroyed it. So Parkway Drive are not going to have a problem. And again, no one's saying you have to like Parkway Drive. You have to run around playing with yourself because you're so happy that they've been booked. Of course not, of course not.
What did you just say?
No, I don't know, I'm getting excited.
Let's just all chill out.
But you can just, you know, no one has to, you don't have to like anything and you don't have to feel celebratory that Parkway are playing, and you're totally within your rights to feel disappointed that they're playing, and I would agree with you that they are not at the core of what Bloodstock is about, and if you feel a bit let down than that, that's fair enough, and I don't think people should be attacked for feeling that way at all.
You're
kind of screaming blue murder at the internet and acting like kind of you personally have been offended because a festival was booked a big modern metal band to headline their metal festival, then I just think, you know,
think
go outside.
I think they're going to win people over there because, again, you know, not to bring up Rammstein loads of times, but people used to go and see their show when they started out because they heard that it was something special because they heard about the pyro.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you have heard about this with Parkway Drive, if you're at the festival anyway and you go and watch it, I think they're going to win people over.
Yeah,
it's
going
to be something
are.
To see, you know.
No one's going to come back going, that was shit. Do you know what I mean? And to me, the difference with people can say it was shit, but I think there's a big difference between not liking someone's music and watching what Parkway Drive do and saying they're a bad live band.
Yeah,
like, to me, that's where
I
draw the line with opinions on that, because it's like, well, you know, what more do you want? And also, the other thing is, when you look at the other kind of controversial, quote unquote, controversial headliners they booked, like Lamb of God, they booked Trivium, they booked Machine Head. These are all brilliant, important, vital modern metal bands. But if we're being honest, I would say most of those bands have kind of gone past their initial hype factors, for want of a better word, when Bloodstock booked them. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah.
Like Trivium, everyone was like, they're going to headline Download one day. Kind of became clear that probably wasn't going to happen. Maybe it could happen again because they put out a blinding album recently. But at that point, it wasn't going to happen. But then they kind of came into Bloodstock instead, and that was a really cool, different way of doing it. Kind of feel the same way about Machine Head and maybe Lamb of God as well. Parkway have done nothing but get bigger and bigger and bigger and better and better and better as they've gone along. And this is a festival capitalising on that in the best way possible and giving them a chance to prove themselves. And I just think it should be applauded.
I think they will, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them headline Download in the future.
I would love that. I would love that. And oddly, this was only the second big debate that got sparked in the metal world this week as well.
I'm worried for your heart here, Merlin.
Well, I've got to be honest, the Bring Me thing I got because I you know, I think it's a bit different, but Parkway, I was a bit like, come on. But yeah, so Bring Me got a number one album.
Ammo,
which we said we both liked, I think.
Yes,
yeah,
I like it.
We both enjoy it. Whether it's a metal album or even a rock album is up for debate. I guess the conversation is Bring Me the Horizon getting a number one album with this album specifically a good thing for rock? Or does it not make a fucking blind bit difference?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if I care.
Right. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I just think it's a good record. Lots of people are talking about it. Lots of people are going to hear it and lots of people are going to enjoy it. And if people are going to hear it and enjoy it, why does it matter? I don't feel like it's a betrayal. I just feel like it's a band doing what they're doing and evolving. I don't know. I don't think it's like I said, I don't feel like it's sort of some betrayal of some sacred values that I hold dear or something like that. I just think it's a good record and you can enjoy it and you can take it or leave it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why do you feel differently? Do you feel like it is sort of a turning their back on something? Do you feel like it's sort of a betrayal of a scene?
No, I was kind of going into it more, I wasn't even looking at it from the point of view of whether it's a betrayal of the scene. The two options I was thinking of is, this going to be a good thing for rock music, or is it not going to make a difference? Like, have they gone too far out of... Like, has their sound evolved too far beyond rock music? And have they kind of attempted to... excuse me, attempted to catch on to that mainstream attention too much now for it to make a difference? You know, if they got... Put it this way, if they got to number one with There Is A Hell or Sempiterno,
yeah,
I think you would feel very differently about it. But I guess, you know, I sent a tweet basically saying, Parkway Drive doing Ali Pally, Architects have just done Wembley, Bring Me You've Got Number One Album, and people say rock is dead. Kind of like a bit of a flipping.
But yeah, and people and a lot of people tweeting back
going, oh, Bring Me doesn't rock, count, it's yeah. not doing anything. So it's not really anger at them turning their backs.
Don't know. I think we've talked in the past about how we are living in a world now where it's less about genre and more about just stuff you like.
Mm.
And I think if you like that record, you like that record. And I don't know if it's necessarily going to cause any uplift within the rock scene as a whole, because it is moving away from that and it is more mainstream. But, you know, on the other hand, people might go back, check out the old stuff, that kind of thing. But the thing that we were talking about as well is I listen to that record and I don't like it as much as That's the Spirit or Sempiterno, but I do like it. And I wish that there was something else similar that I could listen to, because I was enjoying it, but I'd kind of rinsed it. I was like, I've played it too many times and it's annoying me now. I want to listen to something else, something else like it. And there isn't anything else like it. And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, they have kind of just made their own path, and there aren't really any bands like it. So it's not in this. It's not the kind of thing where one band/album gets loads of acclaim, and then everyone's like, "Oh yeah, it's part of this other scene." And here's five bands that sound like them. It's not like, I'm not saying nu metal is exactly like that, because obviously, you know, there's an argument about whether certain bands should have been called nu metal, but you could kind of make the argument that there were some other bands doing heavy things, you could kind of put them in the same group. But I don't know who you'd put them in a group with now, and I think that's shown in the, you know, reflected in the fact that they're doing all kind of different events this summer. It's not like they're headlining Download, they're going and playing all different places, and I don't know, it's a weird one.
It is weird, isn't it? Do you think it's possible for a young band, and with the greatest respect, I'm not including Avenged Sevenfold and Slipknot in this, I'm kind of talking bands that have started to get big post-2010, let's say. Do you think it's possible for a young modern metal band, or at least really heavy, properly heavy rock band, to get to the number one without quite drastically evolving their sound?
I don't know. I mean, that's a big question, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
I don't know. You never know kind of what's going to catch, you know. Maybe some band would come out and they'd have a song that would just catch. The songs I really love actually on Arlo, you know, we've talked about Nihilist Blues, that's a cool song, but Mantra and Wonderful Life I love, and they're much closer to the Bring Me the Horizon that we know. They're much closer to the metal, they're much closer to that heavy kind of sound. Like I said, it'd be different if there was kind of an album of those songs and it got to number one. You'd go, oh, you know, maybe there'd be some kind of resurgence of something, or it would pave the way for other bands. But it's not, it's much more of a mixed record than that.
I just think, this is what you said, really, like, people's listening habits are changing, and I think, you know, a lot of younger music fans listen to playlists rather than albums now. Don't want to generalise too much, because, you know, the fact that an album's got to number one, sure, that's not always the case.
Yeah.
But, you know, people love to mix it up, and I think Bring Me have put an album together which will appeal to a lot of stuff. I think I've talked to them here before about how it's quite common in, like, hip-hop and R&B and pop music for artists to put out, like, 19-track albums where they've got so many different styles represented, and what they're actually doing is creating songs that will get put on different playlists on Spotify, and that's how people will listen to them. I think Bring Me, even though it's not a long album, it's a proper, you know, succinct piece of work, there's a lot of different styles going on there, and I think you could take different elements and put them onto different things.
But they've always been really, work for them. They've always been really zeitgeisty.
Yeah,
when they
totally.
Came out,
you know, they kind of set the zeitgeist in a lot of ways, don't they?
Yeah, when they came out and it was the deathcore thing, you know, that was sort of the cutting edge of metal at the time, or what was very, very popular. And they're just on the trends every time, like, not only in music, but in Ollie's clothing label as well, and in their own merch. And I think I sent you a screenshot of them. They had a necklace they'd done for Armo that was a padlock, and padlock necklaces are really big at the moment. And, like, Miley Cyrus is on Twitter wearing a padlock necklace, and I'm like, I hate myself because I want one. But, you know, they're just on trend every time. They just know what is going to sell. Yeah, so there is obviously, you know, it's their record and it's a creative artistic thing, but they also know exactly what is gonna
they've got their marketing right down now, to an absolute T,
and they know exactly what is gonna hit and what is gonna take off and exactly how to time everything. So if you're talking about bands coming in and getting number ones, I think you have to have that quality as well.
Yeah, well, they know their audience, and they know their audience wants. That's exactly. And guess who else knows who their audience wants? Iron Maiden. Guess who else? That's Slipknot.
Yeah,
they're not just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. Like, they know exactly what's gonna work.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's possible that something could go to number one that's heavy, but I think it has to be meticulously thought out like that, and it has to be sort of timed with a moment or a thing. And it's difficult to see where that would come from right now with people's listening habits and with the way that rock and metal is against the mainstream.
Yeah, I mean, there's two kind of strands to this argument. On one side, I feel like I know we're biased, but I do feel like metal as a community is different. I think we are super protective of our scene, and I actually, despite what we've just talked about, I mean that in a good way. I think, you know, we want our scene, we don't want our scene to be dictated by mainstream terms. We don't want our scene to have to pander to everybody else. We want to cultivate our own bands, and we want our own identity. The other side of that is that, you know, music's changing, and the way people consume it is changing. And when you look at this announcement that's just happened for All Points East Festival, which bring me a headline in, they've now added... So All Points East is a festival that's happening across, like, 6 days in Victoria Park in London. And, you know, one day they've got Chemical Brothers headlining, one day they've got Christine and the Queens headlining... I think Bon Iver's headlining one day, and Bring Me the Horizon headlining the other day. And initially, when we saw the other bands announced, it was like Yanaka and Run the Jewels and Idols, and so it was kind of like, okay, that's where they position themselves now. Then, you know, they can see themselves as wanting to be at festivals with our bands on. But now, today, they've just added Architects, who actually seems employed to Surf.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you've got one of the most diverse lineups of the summer.
Yeah, it looks great. I really want to go.
I'm really excited about it. Scarlord's on it as well. He's kind of young artist people are excited about. And, you know, again, it's trailblazing. It's trailblazing to have lineups put together like this. It might not seem it, because people who have been to Reading over the years know that it's not a brand new thing to have, look, hip-hop and metal on the same bill. Wow. But, you know, to be doing it on a stage that big and with the mainstream's eyes on you... I don't know if it means more people will get into metal, but I definitely think it's going to mix it up more. You know, they've got an album and they're number one in the charts at the moment with Danny Filth on it.
Yeah.
You know, they're bringing, like, The Fever out on tour, and they brought Bear Teeth out on tour. Like, they're doing stuff.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, it's just mental.
Yeah.
No one's really doing what they're doing at the moment, and
I'm
whether all, it's going I'm to help
all,
us or not,
I'm all
know.
In on it. I'm totally a fan.
I'm well into it, but I'm with you. I don't know if whether it will... Whether in 10 years' time we're looking back and going, look how I might break the scene down for everybody, I don't know.
Who knows? It's really hard to tell.
We'll find out, won't we?
Yeah.
If Architects suddenly put an album out with, like, dubstep on it or something.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay.
Danny Filth comes back.
Yeah, just hire Danny Filth for your number one album. That was what did it.
Well, he went around a supermarket with them, so we'd have to do something different for Architects. Have to go, like, DIY store or swimming pool.
Just bring Danny Filth in to do really, like... boring activities for your video.
Either chores or maybe just a low-level leisure activity.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I would see Shagrath just taking the bins out on
That's quite metal.
Someone's next video. Who knows? It's a fascinating scene out there. So we'll see what happens, I guess.
I think, like, we've talked a lot about moaning. And obviously, again, you know, you can see where people are coming from with their opinions and stuff. But also, isn't it just cool that there's stuff happening? Like, isn't it just whatever you think, there are things happening?
Yeah.
Like, that's
there's stuff
a cool
going
thing.
On.
And that sounds pretty vapid, but you know what I mean? Like,
Kardashian was it? It was like, I think this is going to be the year where we, like, learn stuff, something like that.
Exactly, yeah. People are making music and playing events and collaborating with each other and getting together and making decisions and doing new things, and that's positive.
Yeah, and if you, I think beyond anything else, if you like heavy music, whether you consider Bring Me the Horizon to be heavy music or you only consider Gorgoroth and Balak to be heavy music, this summer or this year, you've got so much stuff to choose from just in the UK alone.
Yeah, it's huge.
You don't know what Bloodstock's doing, save it until later in the year and do Damnation.
We just got Radar Festival announced as well.
Yeah, Radar Festival's just been announced. That's got some great bands on it. You can go see Bring Me and Architects, and you know, Employed to Serve are a heavy fucking band, and they're playing the same bit as Run the Jewels if you fancy mixing it up a bit. You can go see Download, who have Slayer playing their final UK show. They've got Tool back, they've got fucking Slipknot headlining the main stage. You can go to Arctangent, you can go to 2000 Trees, they have heavy bands there. You can go to Techfest, you know, it's just. And that's only in the UK. You can go abroad as well if you fancy it. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's so exciting. It's so cool to have. And I think we're very lucky to have the choice because, as you will often read in Metalhammer, a lot of countries and people don't have those opportunities to go and do stuff. So let's all just be mates and respect each other's music opinion, shall we? Should we take some really questions, though?
Let's do it.
Go on, then.
All right. Elliot Lever asks, your favourite album title is now your life motto. What is it?
Rain in Blood.
I pick Rain in Blood. Because who wouldn't want to Rain in Blood?
Exactly.
I also thought Behemoth, I Loved You at Your Darkest is quite cool.
Oh, very nice.
Because, you know, loyalty.
Yeah,
loving
sure.
people even when they're fucked
sure.
up. And I also quite like the idea of picking, I can never pronounce the band name, so I'm sorry. How do you pronounce them? Ethel Duaf?
Ethel Duaf. Oh,
yeah.
I know who you're talking about, though.
Because they made an album called Through My Dog's Eyes. Which was just all about...
Really?
Yeah, all about from a dog's point of view.
That's awesome.
And I always just quite like that album as a novelty, and I kind of like the idea that, you know, your motto would be Through My Dog's Eyes, and you would just try and live, like, the things your dog sees.
That's
which I couldn't do because
idea.
I don't have a dog, but you could do that.
I could do it. Shout out Ozzy and Hector. Yeah, I've got a dog called Ozzy. What about it? Matt Grimster. Fucking what a name. Asks, in light of the Parkway Drive announcement, don't get us going again, Matt, are there any other bands you think could or should headline the festival but would likely cause outrage among some fans? So bands that might kick up a bit of a stir that might cause a bit of a
Architects would be in that category, wouldn't they?
Oh wow, I mean, that would be, I feel like that would be even more of a sideways leap than Parkway. Yeah,
that would be very cool, but it would be you know, because they just did Wembley Arena, so it's not out of the
well, yeah.
question for the future, is it?
I guess that means they're bigger in the UK than Park. Ooh, I don't know.
Who knows?
Doesn't really matter, does it? But yeah.
I'd like to see Devin Townsend do it. Cause I think
he's
sub-headlined before. I don't think it'd be particularly controversial, but then at the same time, he's had so many different eras, and it would depend kind of
true.
What sort of a set he would bring.
Yeah. Probably not a Casualties of Cool.
No, probably not.
I've got Korn.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Because I think a lot of people on the face of it
would
go,
I'd be so happy.
Oh, Korn, because, you know, again, they're not like a traditional heavy metal band at all.
They're
but
such a great band.
I also think, you know, Korn play the UK pretty much every year, right? I think Korn doing Bloodstock would feel different, and it would feel exciting in a kind of new way because it would be a headline set and it would be a slightly different environment. And also, I think most people that like metal have got time for Korn. Maybe that's a generalisation. I think maybe more people than they realise probably have time for Korn. Like, they get out there and they start jamming out those classics. Like, I can't really see that being anything other than an absolute success at a metal festival.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to see that so badly. Can you just make that happen?
Well,
you've got the name of a wizard.
I don't know this. I haven't specifically asked the Bloodstock guys about this that I can remember, but I reckon if they thought the opportunity was there to book Korn and if the start was on the line, I reckon Bloodstock would go for that.
It would be so cool.
I've also written down, and it's only controversial because it depends what state he's in when he turns up, but Marilyn Manson.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Do you think he's too big though?
I don't think he's too big. No. I think he's... Like, his profile is higher than 90% of bands that play Bloodstock, but in terms of actual draw,
yeah.
I don't think he's too big.
Yeah.
Personally. Like, I don't think he's big. I don't think he would draw many more tickets than, like, Slayer or someone like that who's played before. And...
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, if he turned up and he was on it, I think that could be quite interesting.
I would love that. You're just building a festival for me, so.
Yeah. Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, obviously.
I haven't actually written that down, but I just thought,
what
complete hell fest.
Yeah.
Would you put Nine Inch Nails on Bloodstock? That's probably too left field.
I don't know, and that's a funny one as well.
They're super credible, but
Nine Inch Nails have said in the past that they didn't want to do like super super metal bills, but then they kind of have still done metal bills. So I don't know where they fit into things.
But yeah, Korn's definitely my number one out of all of those. I think that would be great. And I think they're just the right size as well.
Yeah.
Korn for Bloodstock 2020.
Yeah. Elliot Holt asks, what bands have you personally struggled with getting into but have eventually done something to change your mind?
I've done this before. Oh, sorry, he said something, didn't he? What was his choice?
He said, I really struggle with Mastodon until Emperor of Sand.
Okay. I was going to say, I've done this already. A Perfect Circle, wasn't a fan, got into them on Eat the Elephant, and yeah. I was shaking her head in disgust at my very reasonable answer.
Yeah, I just don't get it.
Alright, fine.
I love all their old albums. I just don't get why. Alright,
you're the expert, fine. What's your choice then?
Probably just pick Iron Maiden.
Yes!
I've never really been fussed on them, but then you've talked about them a lot, very enthusiastically, and I went to one of their shows with you, and I listened to some of the songs more, and I was like, yeah, okay, they're not my favourite band in the world, but I actually can see now why they're such passionate about them. So, yeah.
The greatest band of all time is always a solid answer for anything. Brendan Crabb asks, can the Dirt movie possibly do the book proper justice? Some of the stories seem like they'd be far too X-rated to be included. I don't know if it's really X-rated. For me, it's more a question of, you know, we're in a bit of a different climate now. And I think some of the stuff that goes on in that book is, I don't know, dubious. I don't know what the best opinion is.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a funny one, isn't it? We've talked about before, post Me Too, how it will be received. But I have never read the book. I've just read a lot about the incidents in the book. I've only read the heroin diaries.
Right.
So I should really get on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. We will see, though. I mean, you know, I first read it when I was like 13 or 14, and you kind of think, oh my god, awesome! They're just shagging loads of groupies, and like it's chaos and it's madness. This is great. Slightly different. I haven't read it since then, so I'll try and read the book before I see the film, actually, to see if I've got a slightly different take on it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Michael Jolly asks, do you think this latest wave of metalcore bands will be able to influence as many new bands as, say, Black Sabbath? Or will metalcore be the end of metal as we know it?
So I actually asked him on the Facebook page, facebook.com/metalhammerreaders, if you want to get involved. What I kind of meant by metalcore bands, and he kind of says Architects, While She Sleeps, maybe even Bring Me the Horizon.
Oh, okay, right. So sort of just like the newer wave of, we say newer wave of bands, they'll be around for like more than a decade, but that kind of class of bands.
Yeah, the 21st century class of metal bands. I mean, firstly, no one's influenced as many bands as Black Sabbath, because Black Sabbath influenced everyone, technically speaking. So,
but I mean, I would always bring up Linkin Park as the band where a lot of bands now would say that they were influenced by Linkin Park.
Totally.
And I could definitely see other bands being influenced by Architects, Bring Me, etc. Because they've got that kind of appeal where they've got enough melody that you can get into them if you've never heard heavy music before. And they're playing the kind of venues where, or festivals where you might end up seeing them on the bills and getting into them and wanting to pick up an instrument, so I think so.
Yeah, I agree. And if you doubt that Linkin Park influenced the metal scene in any way, you've got the editor and deputy editor of Metal Hammer right here, who they helped move along back in the day. So the proof's right there, people. Next week, I'm on a top secret mission, though.
Are you?
Yes.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Paris.
Ah!
It's not that top secret, because I'm going to talk about it a bit next week.
Paris?
I'm off in Paris doing something very exciting that I will talk about this time next week.
That's you and Steve that have both been to Paris.
I know.
I'm ill and left out.
I know. Steve Hill also went to Paris for something that you'll be able to read about in the next issue of Metal Hammer as it happens, actually. It's not connected. But yeah, that's going to be fun. In the meantime, please do buy the latest issue of Metal Hammer magazine. We're celebrating 50 years of metal. It's one of the biggest projects we've put together. It's absolutely monumental, and it comes with free Metallica beer mats and a giant Iron Maiden poster as well. What's more metal than a beer mat?
5 decades of the best music ever and beer mats.
Yeah, and a poster. It's really good. And as we said last week, the 50 years of metal thing is something we're going to be looking into through this whole year, because metal's turning 50. That's amazing and brilliant. And we want to celebrate it. We should celebrate all music. Please continue to spread love and understanding and mutual understanding of respect.
You're like Mr. Burns after the chemical spill.
Yeah. I just want to give you love.
I bring you love.
Yeah, stop arguing on the internet, everybody. Let's just all try and enjoy all the great stuff we've got coming up this year, shall we? We will see you next week, everyone. Feel free to keep on sending us cake as well.
Yeah, I would love it so much.
Shout out,
Alistair. I would never say no to cake. Alistair, the cake lord.
The cake lord, Alistair. Thank you very much for that, man. And thank you to everyone else. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.